So on this week's Talk On to Walk On, it's our Just Us episode, and we decided to talk about self-talk, and I'm laughing because the irony of it. We have had so much faffing getting to this point, haven't we, Patrick? Because I keep saying, who's going to be listening to me talk about, sound like an expert on self-talk? And I think you've had to bring me down. So there is a slight irony in us doing this episode this afternoon. It's one that we decided to talk about because it's one that I think afflicts us all, but all in very different ways. I know it's something I've definitely had to work on, and we've mentioned it a lot in our previous podcasts with our guests. And while you will hear me spouting on about the power of conversation, you will often hear that backed up with the power of positive self-talk. And I know it's not easy, and so many ingredients impact the words that we say to each other, but more importantly, they impact the words that we say to ourselves, and the words that we say to ourselves then impact the way we go about our lives, I truly believe. And I know you love a stat, Patrick, so I'm going to open with one. And apparently we have between about 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day, and about 80% of those thoughts are negative. And the next day we repeat about 90% of the same thoughts as we had the day before. So that's pretty scary, I think. But I think also it helps us understand that self-talk is so important. I also know, and I've learned recently in my own self-development, that the brain is there to protect us. And as soon as we start thinking negatively, it will maximize it, because it wants to stop us and conserve our energy for if we are chased by a saber-toothed tiger, because that's how we've evolved. So again, understanding that it's natural for the brain to stop us from doing things has really helped me, actually. So I see it as a constant challenge that I am not going to let this stop me from doing things that I want. I know you think about it differently, Patrick. So I'll hand over to you now and let you give your initial thoughts.
No, I remember that stat that you mentioned, but I only remembered half of it because I didn't remember the bit about that the next day, all the thoughts that you'd had the day before then repeat, because if 80% of them are negative, then clearly we've got to try to manage the way our brain processes those negative thoughts. I think that for a lot of people, it's natural for those thoughts that flood through our brains every day to be more on the negative side rather than thoughts which are building us up and being positive. And I think that one of the things which we're hoping to learn more about, and our listeners can hear what we have to say about it, are all the tips and the strategies and the things that we can adopt as we lead our lives to try to manage that self-talk in a more positive way, or at least not to have those negative, it's like a negative spin to the way we're processing things in our brain and going about our daily life.
Yeah, because they say there's lots of sayings around self-talk. One of them that stands out to me is that your thoughts create your reality. And I do actually truly believe that. If you can imagine, if you're constantly saying to yourself, I'm not good enough, I've got the wrong accent, or there's people out there better than me, who would listen to me? Why do I deserve? I don't deserve it. Why me? And then obviously on top of that, the affliction of comparison, and that's self-criticism. It's layers on layers. It's going to have a negative effect on you actually fulfilling dreams, for once, for being, not trying to not be too cliche, but actually stopping you from doing things that you actually truly in your heart really want to do. But we have this incredible ability to convince ourselves, and instinctively to just hone in on the negative, and we have to truly be aware of it. And I think if you become aware of it, that's the first step, is knowing that it's natural to feel that way, that everybody feels that way. Everybody doubts themselves. Everybody has moments of hesitation. people, it's what do we do once we've acknowledged it? There it is. Hello. Now what? To, you know, minimize it, or actually even better, eliminate it, to enable us to, as we say, walk forward in life to achieve what you want to achieve.
It's like a tug of war, isn't it? And you're going on inside you. You know, you're wanting to deal with things in a almost like a constructive and affirmative way, but it's the elements of self-doubt that creep in. Yeah. And you know, there are analogies. You know, people talk about things sitting on your shoulder. You know, you've got the angel and the devil sitting on your shoulder. And I remember that comic book when we were kids called The Numbskulls. It was either in the Beano or the Dandy, with inside somebody's skull with all these people running around doing different things. It's a bit like that. It's like brain training in a way, to try to be, if our natural state is to be self-effacing, to put ourselves down and to worry and to have self-doubts, then it is brain training to try to get rid of those and think more positively in the face of, and we're talking about self-talk, we're talking about our inner voice. You ought to do that in the face of outside conversations. And you know, our brand is based on the power of conversation. It's talk on to walk on. But we have in the past talk about the power of conversation and of positive self-talk, because that's where that sort of battleground. And those conversations can be affirming, positive conversations with other people, or they could be negative conversations. You were talking earlier, before this recording started, about, you know, even from childhood, all the things that people say to you, which are, let's say, negative, putting you in your place, telling you you've done things incorrectly, done things wrong. So it starts from an early age, that sort of the conversation element, before we have the maturity to then recognize and be self-aware of self-talk and actually dealing with the things in our, you know, using our inner voice.
Yeah, because we repeat what's said to us, don't we? And I think until we realise how important it is to surround yourself with the right people and minimise those outside voices, the outside people who are putting you down, the outside people who actually secretly don't want you to succeed, but so they'll be very subtle and say negative things, or they'll say, well, are you sure? Are you sure you don't need plan B? Or, you know, I'm not saying that's a negative, but it's such, again, you know, what if you don't succeed? What if you fail? God forbid, you know, and learn a great lesson in life and have a great story to tell. And I think that's one of my top tips that I think we can come on to now, is about the importance of who you surround yourself with. And okay, you might not be able to eliminate everybody. You know, people are going to have some negativity, and some people, it's going to come from a good place, they're caring. But it's also being very aware of what you take in and what you repeat to yourself from what they've said, being very selective. So A, be very careful about the people you're with, and B, be very careful about some of the words that those people say to you, and C, be very choosy about what you then repeat to yourself. I think that's definitely a lesson that I've learned.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially that final point you made, point C. I think that's really, really important. And it's also really difficult, you know, choosing what you process. We're all different. And we might, two different people might hear the same thing and process it in their brain very differently. And it's something that we've all got to practice and get used to, in terms of deciding how to sort of almost filter out those bits of advice or commentary that, let's say, might be more negative than positive, as opposed to those comments that we can take on board and move forward with.
Yeah, because I think often people say things to us, and it's not the words that they say, it's how they say it. And I think, like you say, we can all receive things in a completely different way than how it was meant. I mean, we in our own relationship often fall foul of that, you know, in terms of sensitivities and things. And I think it's just, again, acknowledging that you suddenly don't feel right about something that somebody said to you, and how you respond is actually really important, obviously vocally, but again internally, and it's working on that. And you mentioned the whole point about, you know, almost rewiring or retraining our brain, because coming back to my first earlier point about the brain instinctively wants to protect us, and it's like, oh, okay, you know, my stomach feels a little bit knotted when he said that, or, you know, or my mouth's gone a bit dry and my heart beats a little bit fast. What's going on here? And I know it's so difficult to do, because everyday life is everyday life, and we just respond, don't we? Most of us just either snap back, go quiet, and it tends to be a negative response if we've received something that we don't quite like. But the key is to just, even if it's 5 hours later, just go, maybe I probably overreacted a bit there, or maybe I just need to just, you know what, let it bounce off me. Let it bounce off me. What do I think? And tune into our gut, you know, trust ourselves so much more, trust our inner thinking so much more. You know, I think that's what I've tried to learn to do, because somebody else's voice shouldn't be louder than your own voice. Does that make sense?
And go back to what you were saying earlier about the natural desire to protect yourself. It's almost like building up some resilience, yeah, and being resilient to certain situations and certain comments and so on. You're not going to get anybody actually necessarily there at the time telling you, you know, be resilient, you know, ignore that comment, take that comment, you know. Yeah. It's down to you to build that resilience.
Yeah.
But at the same time, sometimes actually I'm quite in awe of people who seem to be quite strong and seem to be able to take whatever is thrown at them, and they have that sort of strong, what I don't know, because it's not me and we're all different, is whether inside of them they're probably struggling as much as anybody would if they're being thrown a particular issue, but maybe it's their coping strategy and their resilience, which means that their reactions are very, very different.
Yeah.
Quite impressive, really.
It is impressive, but it is about just, it's the tactics, I think. I think, you know, it's all right saying to yourself, oh, I'm going to tell myself something different, but you've got to believe it, first of all. But I think even just if you're acknowledging that it's something that you need to work on, know that there are tips and tricks that you can do, even just taking a deep breath, going for a walk, a big glass of water, you know, just while you just think about how something has landed, and whether you're going to take it on board. You know, there's so many tips and tricks. Journaling is another big one around, you know, writing down how you're feeling. I think there's a great saying of, which I love, is you don't know what you think until you write it down, or until you, another one, I sort of put my own twist on it, until you say it out loud. So I think with all of these things, coming back to the people point and the impact that other people have on you, it's just knowing that you aren't what other people think of you. You know, you are what you think of you. And it's just some of this stuff that people will say to you is really good advice, but it might not just be for you at the time. It's where you are. Know you're enough right now. Take a deep breath, you know, tips and tricks, big deep breath, lots of water, go for a walk, whatever works for you. Write down what you're feeling. And it's all of this is about just making the space for yourself.
I think it was you who taught me this idea of if somebody says something to you and you react badly to it, it's not necessarily what they said. The managing of the situation is down to you, and how you choose to react to something, again, is a product of what's gone in your brain, how you've processed that particular comment or situation, and how you've chosen to react. I say chosen, it might be instinctive or very, very quickly, but that's your reaction, isn't it? Yeah. Rather than the microsecond pause and think, well, I'm not going to react. I'm not going to allow them to goad me into in this way and make me react in this way. I'm going to pause and I'm thinking, I'm going to choose to turn my back, or however you choose to deal with it.
Again, it comes back to that point of that accountability and just listening to your own voice, just taking that pause. It's not always easy. It's not often realistic. But actually, the starting point is just to acknowledge that you can do it. Mm. Just to acknowledge that uh-oh moment of you actually getting, you know, wound up or feeling, you know, somebody said something somebody has said to you is negative, that you just go, I don't need to take this on. I just don't. Mm. And also know, hang on a minute, this is my brain looking to protect me. If somebody, for example, did our first TikTok the other day with Hannah, and here you go, I'll throw that one out there. And, you know, the first comment was, and we can drift into social media because I think that's quite important as well, because I think it's just as impactful these days and relevant these days. You know, somebody, some random stranger just wrote, that's ridiculous, or this is ridiculous, or something. And we actually burst out laughing, but I think a couple of drinks helped us. But actually, that could have seriously made me go, God, no, I must look terrible, I sound terrible, Michelle, what are you doing, 50 plus, putting a TikTok on, I'm never doing that again. I mean, this is one tiny example, but that came from a stranger. Mm. But maybe people I know actually thought it as well. But another great saying is, what other people think of me is none of my business. Are some of the tactics that I'm now applying, affirmations. And again, people can roll their eyes, you know, but you've got to just go, okay, what do I do with that? What do I do with this? Okay, take a breath, go for a walk. Again, I'll repeat it. Say an affirmation, you know, listen to your inner voice and just try and respond in a way that, you know, just let it go. Don't let it take you off your chosen path.
Self-talk and the way you process these comments with social media is so much more difficult, isn't it? Because when you're taking in a comment that somebody's made face-to-face in a conversation, you can hear the tone that they're using, you can see them, you can see their facial expression, you can listen to how loudly they're saying it, and you can pick up so many cues. That example you gave of, you know, that's ridiculous comment, and any other types of comments that you can read, it's simply just the words, and it's, that makes it so much more. I think that's why social media is, I mean, it's fantastic, but it's
can be toxic.
It is for mental health. Yeah. People can't, there's no context to a lot of the comments that are made. So you really don't know. There's no subtlety, is there?
Yeah.
So for that self-talk to then, you know, initiate in your own brain, you've got no context to have that sort of self-talk conversation with you, just what you're reading.
And actually, when you read something, I don't know, is that stronger than when somebody says something to you? I mean, that's, again, a whole different conversation around communication. But I think the key to it is just a bit of perspective sometimes as well. I was like, I don't know this person, don't really care. But then again, I've done a lot of self-work. I mean, maybe me 2 years ago might have been really hurt by that and upset. Mm. You know, it could have completely spoiled what was quite a special fun moment with my daughter. And you just go, oh. But I was actually proud of it. I was proud of me and Hannah, because we just let it go. Mm. But we were lucky that, you know, we had each other together and we just laughed it off. But actually, it was a good lesson. It was another good lesson. It was a teaching moment that, you know, something we let go. And I saw Hannah laugh about it as well. But I, you know, I haven't got a massive social media following or anything, but there are people who are out there who've got huge followings. And it's almost become like a badge of honor to get like toxic negative comments. I mean, I struggle a lot, it's now called X, with Twitter. You know, I used to be on them a lot more. I tend to try and retweet positivity. I try and educate myself on there as opposed to going down the spiral route of toxicity. But sometimes you can't help but just have a little click and go, God, what, these people, keyboard warriors, you know? What impact is that having on the person receiving it? I don't know. But again, you know, I think a lot of these celebrities or whoever they are popular on social media, really more than ever, need to be working on that self-talk and working on the letting, not letting things in to take them off their path and their mission.
And you do, with celebrities, you do get the whole range. You do get some celebrities who say, yeah, I don't look at my feeds. I don't look at the messages that are put on. And then that takes a huge amount of discipline. And then you get others who say no. Yeah, I and maybe they're more resilient again. I don't know, but they want to read everything.
Yeah.
So, yes. But clearly, again, what's going on in their brain? That resilience and that protective things are there in abundance in their brain for them to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's the other thing is it being, you've got to be selective on social media. And again, if anybody's not selective, then they're being very silly. If they just aimlessly scroll and read some of this negative content, and, you know, it's going to have an impact. Your brain, you know, your thoughts become you. You know, if you keep seeing stuff on repeat over and over and over, that's negative. Surely, you know, it does, it brings you down. And again, just be aware of it. Just again, we laugh about alarms on our phones, but I have a thing on my Instagram now about if I've been on for an hour, you know, during the day, it tells me, I get a little alarm, it says, oh, do you need a break? And it's but yeah, I'm very selective about who I follow and the content that I absorb. Definitely.
Your Instagram alarm was set at 45 minutes, and that went off at about 8 a.m. this morning.
Oh, I know. I was, again, absorbing good quality content. I think that's the key. If you're following somebody or some content that is just not, just tune into how it makes you feel. You know, what's going on in your mind when you're reading that? Are you comparing yourself in a negative way? Are you thinking, oh, they're so amazing, I could never be that? Just watch the thoughts. Just take a minute and go, how's this making me feel? What's this making me think? And if honestly it's making you stop yourself from going forward with something that's positive in your own life, or something that's, you know, you wouldn't post because you're too frightened about what other people think, or people comparing you to this other person or whatever, just unfollow them. It's really that easy. But please just be mindful of it. I'm guilty of it. You know, if I listen to other podcasts, there are some amazing podcasters out there. But sometimes, you know, the imposter syndrome creeps in and I go, oh, these are so amazing. Oh, my God, who's going to listen to me? You know, and straight away I go, shall stop it. Stop it right now. And I might actually probably not unfollow, but I'll just take a minute from comparing myself. It's not their fault. It's my fault. It's me. You know, I just need to check in with myself, because as soon as I start that spiral of it stops me from doing this. And that's a really good example, a very simple example of, you know, and most people will go, Michelle, of course you should do it. But then there will be people out there going, oh, she's not as good as, I don't know, whoever, Fern, or, you know, I might begin to compare myself to Elizabeth Day, Fern, Mel Robbins, all these amazing, fabulous women who are sharing such incredible messages, brilliant at what they do. But if I started comparing myself and listening to what I thought other people think, I wouldn't be doing it. And then, you know, and I know that we're making a difference to even, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 people's lives with each episode.
You know, you talked about imposter syndrome, and I think imposter syndrome is a really good example of something that apparently 70% of people, so 70 or 80% of people suffer from, or have felt imposter syndrome at some time during their lives. And that is all internal. That's a really good example of something that people suffer from, which is totally self-generated, but it's difficult to deal with because of all the external. You know, if you're in a work situation and you opened up to your boss that you had imposter syndrome and really didn't think that you deserved to be in the role, I mean, you wouldn't do that, would you? You wouldn't open up about imposter syndrome to somebody that you feel that you're being fraudulent to.
I'd like to think that you could. Our messaging very much with our podcast is do that, be honest.
For sure, for sure. And I was going on to say, but that's where the value of formal feedback sessions and that sort of thing is so important, because that's when you have the opportunity to sit down and more objectively, hopefully, your superiors will tell you, well, no, you're actually doing a great job and we're really pleased, and these are your strengths and these are your learning opportunities. But when you were mentioning imposter syndrome, I felt my heart sort of beat, because I've suffered from imposter syndrome in quite a few stages of my career. And it's something that is very difficult to get rid of. It sort of comes back. It's a bit like having a recurring illness that comes back to you every now and then. And that's where, let's say, positive self-talk and grounding yourself in a reality and what is evidenced as opposed to what you might think is so important. Talking to yourself in that way.
And again, that's the tactics, isn't it? Again, some of the coaching that I do is I get my clients to write down their list of achievements. I give it as an exercise, because it's something, I know we often say, don't look back, look forward, you're not going that way. But actually, listing your own achievements and writing them down and reminding yourself of how far you've come is huge for the brain, because it's that part of that rewiring. And often people really undervalue their own accomplishments. I've had a couple of clients where they've had midlife females and their children are grown up. The last thing they think as an achievement is the fact that their kids are strong, healthy, going into jobs. It's a huge, huge achievement to bring up your kids, often holding down jobs, elderly parents, friendship issues, grieving, all the shit that life throws at you. You completely forget how far you've come and what you've overcome. And again, that's, again, another thing that I like to work on with my coaching clients is just remind yourself how far you've come. Go back a bit. What skill set and what did you say to yourself at that time to get you through it? Again, remind yourself of those moments when you've had to talk to yourself positively.
It's that self-doubt. Your example just now of sort of parenting, that's a great example, because it affects generally people who are in a position of responsibility. And what greater responsibility is there than being a parent? And as you say, there would be lots and lots of examples they can look back on as parents to say, yes, I've achieved this, I've achieved that. Yeah. But interesting, you talk about your coaching clients. Again, going back to what I was saying at the beginning, I think that imposter syndrome definitely needs, it's something which is generated by negative self-talk, but it needs outside sort of, let's say, help and reassurance and affirmation to really deal with it. I don't think that it's something that you can cope with totally by yourself. You need some sort of external
It definitely helps. I mean, that's why I do the coaching, isn't it? It's part of it, because I've got the empathy, because I've been there myself in so many life situations. And one of my failings, I think, and one of the big lessons that I've learned is that you can't do it alone. You can't do this stuff alone, because there's so much stuff that's going around in your head sometimes. And you've witnessed it with me, the spiral, as I used to call it. I probably still call it. I have had a couple recently, but certainly not of the magnitude and the length of time that it used to affect me. If you're on your own in your own head and there's a lot of stuff going on in your life and you're trying to cope, it's so difficult but so easy for it to spiral out of control. It impacts your sleep, it impacts your relationships with your kids, your partner, your work. If you're going through stuff, or even if you've been through stuff in the past and you want to do something fresh and move forward and have a fresh goal or outlook, that stuff can still haunt you. It can stop you if it's still there and you've not talked about it. You've not been validated for how you feel. You've not had somebody repeat back to you what you're saying. I mean, that's another tactic that I tend to use. People tend to use dramatic language about themselves. It was a disaster. And sometimes I'll say, was it? That
kind of thing, because again, that self-talk can be so elevated, and it really is about pausing. But as I say, and having somebody listen to you and ask you the right questions to get you to reframe how you're thinking about things. It's certainly not to deny that these things have happened. It's just to reframe them and minimize them to, so again, to allow you to create new space for fresh thinking to move forward in life.
The language you use is so important, doesn't it? When people say it's a disaster or it's the end of the world, we know that they don't literally mean it, but it is a sign of where their brain is at that moment with the issue. Or it's not going to be an issue, as you say, it may be just tons and tons of different things going on in their life. They feel overwhelmed. They don't know how to cope. And I know you've had a couple of clients where you've had to address those issues, which makes me think, and I don't want to drift off too much. When I think of, from my own experience, when I think of overwhelm, you know this, but I'm sharing it. One way that I've learned to cope with overwhelm is this idea of compartmentalization. Now, before I say anything more, I know that if you look into it, it's not a technique that everybody says is actually good. So some people say, well, no, that isn't a technique that should be used, because it doesn't go to the root of what the overwhelm is. In the past, when I felt overwhelmed, I've tried to take all the things that are overwhelming me and which I've thrown into a big bucket. So I felt overwhelmed because they're all there in a massive bucket, and I think that they're going to literally overwhelm me. So I sort of one by one try to take them out and put them into a series of smaller buckets. Even mentally, I think of it that way. So put the problems or the issues I'm trying to deal with into a series of smaller buckets, and then just try to separate it out. So what might have been a big disaster or the end of the world is like a series of littler things. And then when they're littler things, you can learn to deal with them almost one by one. I just think that the visualization of that has helped me. Now, somebody would say, well, you haven't actually dealt with them. All you've done is you've deconstructed the big overwhelm, and you've tried to knock that off one by one. It works for me, and it doesn't work. And I know it works for a lot of people, but it doesn't work for everyone.
Yeah. But you can also turn that on its head in terms of what you've got to do going forward, in terms of, oh God, I've got all this to do. But it's, they call it like a journey of 1,000 steps begins with one small step. Because unless you break it down, you're not going to tackle any of it.
That's right.
And the key also is, you might not get it all done, but I think the key also at this self-talk point is rewarding yourself, congratulating yourself when you've even done the first step. Again, even just something like people are frightened to go to the gym because they're going to compare themselves to people that are in there. Well, they say, put your shoes by the door in the morning, or, get your gym stuff out and leave it at the end of the bed. Don't put your phone further away so it's not the first thing that you pick up to start comparing yourself to other people in, who are, fitness experts on social media. There's all these little things, but when you do that, reward yourself. And so your compartmentalization, it helps with the visual because it's broken down into smaller, manageable tasks. But also, as you tick each one off, again, people write, I'm a list, we both write lists and we tick off, you very much more than me. But I just, even that tick, it's like so satisfying, isn't it?
It is.
Feel good. That's like a mini reward for me, as well as a glass of wine, probably.
Yeah.
Depending on the time of day.
The other thing is, unlike to-do lists that you might have at home or work, which are tasks you have to get done, where it's frowned upon, where you look down the list and you just do all the easy ones and you think, I'll leave all the difficult ones to the end. Yeah. When we're talking about overwhelm and compartmentalization and deconstructing these into small buckets and your reward point, it's really good to do the easy ones first.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. It's to use your low hanging fruit or the easy wins and so on. Because you're dealing with something, you're actually getting something done and dealing with it and making what's left so much smaller to cope with. Yeah. I really like the reward idea.
Yeah, it definitely works. Again, it works with my clients because they will, again, go, well, why am I rewarding myself? I'm like, because you've achieved something, you know. But again, it's honing in on the which one is going to give you the most satisfaction. And often, again, it's not the easiest one. It's actually the hardest one. Which one, if you got that one thing done, is going to make a difference to how you feel about yourself, about creating space in your brain. Another saying, which we'll follow them today, eat the frog for breakfast, do the hardest one first. So again, it can, but it's just whatever mood you're in, how you get, you know, there's no rules to this. These are just examples and tips and tricks. But you've got to work out, again, create the space for yourself, what works for you.
I think I'm right in saying that in James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, he talks about making things easy, you know, coming up with habits that make things easy for you. And he touches on the reward point as well.
And that's, again, what a great, it's so small, but to say, pat yourself on the back, Michelle, pat yourself on the back, Patrick, you know what? Fine, I've done it. Great. Right, what's next? And again, it's that brain retrain, because is it dopamine hit? Of they say focus on the journey, not the end result. And you know, you get that dopamine hit from having achieved something. But it doesn't always last. So you've got to focus on the process. So, you know, getting the certificates at the end or getting that job or getting the likes on post or whatever, it doesn't always last. So really focus on the process itself. And that's why they say reward yourself during the process, because it keeps that dopamine ticking over and that feeling of goodness. And it becomes slightly addictive as well. And it'll keep you going, definitely.
Yeah.
But we've also got to remember, as well as the small things in life, in terms of progressing ourselves forward every day, is, you know, the shit does hit the fan sometimes. And often all at once, you know, and it's in those big moments where, you know, the spiral is more likely to happen, you know, all that whole us saying, oh, take a pause and have a minute and go for a walk. It ain't happening. So what do we do then? Is that anything like that ever happened to you, Patrick? It's definitely happened to me. But I'll let you lead.
Massive. Well, I can think of a massive thing in life when I lost my job. It was about 10 years ago. So I was about sort of, let's say, three quarters of the way through my career. And I'd never lost my job before. And it was a massive shock to me, because literally one Friday afternoon, my boss came in and said, we're terminating your contract. And the conversation took about an hour. That was a Friday afternoon, and that was it. And to this day, I've never had any explanation as to why they decided to terminate my contract. So I lost my job. And of course, when you have no explanation, the only thing that you can think about is what you've done wrong. So, yeah, what did I do wrong? Was I really that bad? What should I have done better? How could I not have avoided this? And these were all conversations going in my brain. I couldn't have this conversation. I mean, nobody else knew why my contract had been terminated. Nothing had happened in my reviews previously and so on. And the lack of feedback and conversation, an explanation, meant that conversation was going on in my head.
Yeah.
And the only coping strategy that in the end that I was able to use was that it was nothing to do with me, that it wasn't personal to me. Now, you could say that was a little bit naive, and maybe there'll be some people think, well, you lost your job, you must have been not good enough or whatever. But I genuinely had no evidence that I wasn't doing a good job. And I had to put it on the individual. So the individual who terminated my contract, I had to convince myself that there was something there that I wasn't aware of, that I just had to accept that these things happen in big companies. It was a new CEO coming in. He had to make changes to his team, and he decided that, you know, instead of having seven people, he wanted five people, and he didn't know me, and so just come in and terminate the contract. But it was a massive blow to me, and because of the circumstances of it, as I said, I had no explanation. All of everything was just going on in my brain, literally for weeks, until I started finding a way to process it.
Did it make you feel ill?
Not physically ill. For a period of time, I felt as if I was sort of going crazy, going mad, because so much, you know, you wake up. I wasn't sleeping very well. I was waking up every morning and writing things down and trying to, because as you know, I'm quite an analytical person, and I thought there had to be some sort of objective, rational reason why somebody terminated my contract. I wanted explanations, and I wasn't getting anything at all. So I was trying to rationalize things myself.
But if that would have carried on, you know, it can really impact your mental and physical health, can't it? You know, and your relationships with family members and whatever. And
absolutely, I was the breadwinner. My wife at the time was bringing up the children. My two children were at school, were at teenage years. And it could easily have spiraled into something pretty awful.
And again, just from a coaching perspective, I think just from an objective perspective as well, is that I think it's okay to actually wallow a bit. You know, I think it's human nature. If that happens to any of our listeners, you know, we're all on that roller coaster ride of life, aren't we? Where, you know, we won't go for probably too long before we've hit a huge obstacle. And it's all right to just have a minute and maybe overthink and overanalyze. But it's, again, coming back to the tips and tricks and techniques of validating that it's okay to feel that way. But actually, okay, now what am I going to do to snap out of it? Because this is now having a personal, real effect on me and the people around me. I know one of my things that I used to do, I just say, Michelle, I'm boring myself now. You know, and again, I'm quite objective. I say Michelle rather than I. Sometimes it'll be I, but if it's you, you're boring me. With this over analytical brain, that going into the detail and minutiae, making up things in my own head that actually haven't happened yet. Another great tactic is to say to yourself, is this a fact or is this a feeling? Because we all create stories, don't we? We create stories from scenarios that are happening to us.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to people losing their jobs, the majority of people who lose their jobs don't understand why they've lost their job, because it's never been explained to them properly. You know, whether you're in a redundancy situation, or whether you know, you turn up to work and your boss doesn't like the color of your tie that day, whatever it is, I think it's the minority of situations where, you know, somebody says, "Yeah, fair cop. I was pretty useless at my job. Yeah, I was stealing the paper clips, and I understand why I've lost my job." And so that means that, yeah, my little story there is repeated thousands of times, hundreds of thousands of times, in terms of leaving people to think, you know, what did I do? How am I going to cope with this? And yeah, and again, all of that going on in their own brain.
So obviously, Patrick, you had to start again, didn't you? And again, that's another moment where we the fear creeps in. And again, you know, applying for jobs and even setting up a business, you know, even launching a podcast. The other thing we have to remind ourselves is we're never going to be fully ready. You're never perfect. Nobody is perfect. And again, that's some of the work that I've done. It's one of the key reasons I actually launched the podcast. One was I had to talk about the power of conversation, because it was like a huge aha moment for me during lockdown to start opening up to a counsellor, opening up about how I was feeling, sharing my feelings more with you and close friends, things I'd never said before. But the other big thing was to challenge myself. I still love a challenge, and we'll come on to age in a second, but, you know, I love to challenge myself. But the amount of times, and literally every podcast episode we've done, I've gone, oh, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. But I'm just learning to go, you know what, let's just do it and see what happens. And, you know, we're learning that, aren't we, both of us?
Yeah, we are. And, you know, you talk about age. The only thing about age is that age shouldn't come into it at all. And it does, because it's, I mean, we should resist age coming into our self-talk and our, because whatever age you are, we should all encourage each other and encourage ourselves to try new things, to start new things, and so on. And don't think that I'm too old or I'm too young. That whatever stage in life, being encouraged to broaden your horizons, learn new things, start new things, has got to be a great positive attitude.
Yeah, and you know what? Perfectionism, it doesn't exist. Progress, not perfection. And another, you know, we recommend perhaps look at the Mel Robbins 5-4-3-2-1. What would you call it? A technique. It's a technique. Again, you know, if we hesitate and go, can't do it, as soon as you feel yourself going down that route, you've got to catch yourself and go, I can and I will. That's what I know. That's a saying I've grown up with. And I hope that you're not all rolling your eyes listening to all these affirmations and sayings, but it is what has helped me rewire my brain. I can and I will is something my mum drilled into me when I was a kid. So that was a positive, and it's still there. Sometimes I switch it to we can and we will, because again, the I means I have to do it on my own, and it is down to me, and I am ultimately accountable. But now and again, I have to acknowledge that I need some help, and I switch it up. So try and forget perfectionism, have a go, start before you're ready. And you know, all of these actually could be their podcast on their own. So we've got plenty of content that we can keep talking to you about, haven't we?
And carpe diem, seize the day.
All of those. That's a great one. Definitely. But midlife, yeah, maybe we'll do a podcast on just purely, I think we do need to just do one on midlife mindset, don't we? Or midlife muddle, as I like to call it. And I think that could be our next episode. So let us know what you think on that, if you want to actually. And I think your younger listeners can learn from us on that as well. And we'll throw some comparisons in there to what our mindset was like when we were younger. And we'll talk about midlife mindset and keeping that positivity and actually embracing midlife and what the positives are, not just the fact we're getting a little bit creakier and a little bit slower.
and learning from them as well. We can learn something from.
We always say that, don't we? We learn from the younger generation. So just wrapping up then quickly, quick summary, pause. So,
yeah, go on. I'll go first.
Okay, pause. Have a minute. Acknowledge that feeling of negativity.
And I'm saying focus on the facts and look for the evidence before you allow your mind to run away with things.
Yeah. Go for a walk. Drink lots of water. I'm throwing 3-in-1 there. Get some dogs. Stay present.
Compartmentalize if it works for you.
Yeah. Get that dopamine hit. Tick off your list and reward yourself, I think, is another key thing, you know, and write down how you're feeling as well. That's something I don't do massively, I'll be honest. I write a lot of things down, but I don't often write down how I'm feeling. I think sometimes I'm afraid to. I think in terms of my own rewiring of my brain, I think I've just learned to do that whole deep breath and reframe how I'm thinking. Anything else? I think there's just so much we've covered.
Possibly. And we should throw that out as a challenge to the listeners. If in summing up, we've missed out anything that we've talked about in this episode, then let us know.
And reframe your language. Be careful of the language that you're using. I think that's words are important, aren't they? Is it a disaster? Is it heartbreak?
Is it the end of the world?
Yeah. I mean, often, obviously, we're never, ever going to diminish anything that happens to anybody. But often, more often than not, it is not the end of the world. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Just throw in another corny cliche.
And a positive way to end.
And remember that the way you talk to yourself does create your reality. So let's talk on to walk on positively, and let's see where it leads. Here's to our next episode. Thanks very much.
Let's see where it leads indeed.
Yes.